12 months.
12 albums.
4 fab lads.
2 Inette Toasts. It's...
A Year in the Life, a Review 2 podcast.
And this month we're listening to Beatles for Sale.
Ooh, I need your love, babe. Guess you know it's true. Hope you need my love, babe. Just like I need you.
Hello and welcome. And now it's over to Johnny for our minute roundup of what's been happening with the Beatles since the last episode.
1 minute on the clock. Here we go. Beatles for Sale is the 4th studio album by the English rock band The Beatles. This is coming out on December 1964. Again, the crazy schedule the Beatles have, releasing 2 albums per year. Just look at the miserable faces on the cover. And you can obviously tell that this album marked a massive departure from the upbeat tone that had characterised them thus far. This was basically because the Beatles had been working so hard and had been on so many tours and were suffering from exhaustion, including, as I mentioned last time, that enormous tour of America and the onset of Beatlemania. The sessions for Beatles for Sale produced the non-album single, which we're not really going to talk about much, I Feel Fine, notable for its intentional use of feedback at the start. I love that song and I love the use of feedback. When Beatles for Sale was recorded, Beatlemania was at its absolute peak. They'd made all of their television appearances, and they then met Bob Dylan, who was a naughty man who introduced them to cannabis. And you can probably see a big influence on that on on their work. This was the 4th album in 21 months. Oh God, I'm not going quickly through this. I'm not fine. Basically, they were knackered. All right, okay. And Lennon said, "I'm going to put this in at the end." Lennon said, "You could, I'm not going to do the accent. You could call our new one a Beatles country and western LP." It does have a lot of country elements on it.
Call our new one a country and western LP.
Which one of them? Was anyway, yeah, so there we go. And just like with you two, whose career me and Tyler have documented extensively in our sister podcasts, they went to America and America influenced them as much as they influenced America, ultimately. And I think that's interesting. But does it lead to a good album? Who knows? Well, we do, I suppose, but we're not going to tell you right away because we're keeping some of our powder dry, for God's sake. Beatles for Sale. December 1964, Tyler. And I think we're ready to get into the album. I would just say the title is... I think it's another one of those Ringo-isms that became... Just like the last album, A Hard Day's Night, became something that stuck and that summed up the moment they were in. I think the Beatles felt they... I don't know if it word exploited is the right word, because I mean, they were very successful, they were enjoying themselves, but they felt like they were a commodity that all the value was being drained out of them as much as possible. You know, that lemon was being squeezed pretty hard. I said lemon, not Lennon.
John Lemon.
John Lemon. What a sour man. All right, so... Right, so... Track one... No Reply. John Lennon taking the lead vocals here on a 2 minute 15 song, and straight away the dynamic has shifted, hasn't it? We've got a fairly downbeat and calm verse here, which, I mean, compare this to A Hard Day's Night, where you've got that enigmatic chord that people have spent years dissecting in musical circles, and then all of that energy and cowbell, let's not forget. And now we've got this, which is so downbeat. Lennon's voice is gritty, it's rough, and it sounds... Well, I don't know, how would you characterise it?
I think sound-wise, as a track, it sounds much fuller. I think there's been, huge steps in technology. Mm-hmm. The recording just sounds more, I don't know, enigmatic, and it's got a more tangible feel to it.
Yeah, I think the upgrades in... recording vocals have captured the subtleties of the voice a lot more than it would do in the past. But Lennon doesn't feel like he's coming in with his, you know, 100-mile-an-hour energy here. It's purposely a little bit laid back. Up until we get the I Nearly Died bit, where all the harmonies come in, massive splash of the cymbals, and that's where we get the usual Beatles sound here. But it's another one... I don't mind this Lennon song in terms of it being a bit bitter and a bit jealous, because I feel like he is playing with personas and speakers a little bit more. So I did feel like I wanted more negativity on the first two albums, but we've almost gone the opposite direction in a lot of ways with this one. The earlier albums were so sweet and saccharine and poppy, and this one, I was just surprised to have a Beatles album open with such a negative song. I mean, No Reply, and then we've got I'm a Loser for the next one, then Babies in Black is about a dead guy. So, interesting. And like I said, you can tell from the miserable faces on the cover, this is not the Beatles that we know and love.
I think what you're supposed to take from this
I
is...
I really hate this character. Who the hell is this? Tyler's just started doing this. It's very weird. Go on, let's see what he's going to say. Go on, what are we taking from this? I mean, you're amusing yourself, which is nice.
It's all right, you've embarrassed him now. He might come back later.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's withered under the light.
He's not used to the stardom. Track number two, I'm a Loser. That's the track title, okay. Johnny.
Yeah, he's heading me off at the pass there. So, I couldn't hear this song without hearing Help.
Oh, really?
Yeah, once after the first bit, when it says, like, and I'm not the only one, and then once it starts getting into the verse, it really sounds like Help to me, but with a country flavour. Flavour? Oh, God. Flavour.
It's Bob Dylan-esque. Attempt at that, I'd say.
Going down here, Bob Dylan's influence is really obvious here. We've got very folksy guitar. We've got the fact that Lennon's saying, my friend. I'm pretty sure without the influence of Dylan, you'd have, well, you wouldn't have lines like my friend being on there. I mean, it's good and it's interesting. And, I mean... I also find it quite funny, the juxtaposition on the single of 8 days a week, because this was it was twinned with that. So on that record, it literally says 8 days a week, I'm a loser, which is quite funny in terms of the way that it scans. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And again, the negativity is very present on this album compared to the other ones.
Yeah, it's... I don't know, it's got this energy that... I started to feel halfway through it. It's like they are maturing as musicians. They're taking you on a ride now.
Yeah, although the end lines in the verses are a bit diddly diddly dumb. A little bit kind of, I don't know.
Some of this seems beneath them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a bit formulaic. I mean...
It's good, but it serves a purpose, but it's... I don't think it's what they want to be doing.
I mean, I like the fact that they're taking the wrong footing us by... a successful, you know, four albums in, Beatlemania, and we've got a song called I'm a Loser. I think that's interesting. If I were to pick up this record, like, oh, the Beatles new release, what's on it? And looked at it and saw a song called I'm a Loser, and it's sung by Lennon. That's interesting in terms of its contradiction straight away, but the song itself doesn't really bear this out. To me, this is like a not very good proto version of Help. And McCartney's doing some nice bass work. The hi-hat keeps it nice and fresh. From Ringo, but it's serving a not wonderful song, I would say. I'm sort of conscious about... me and Tyler are very conscious about the fact that we aren't really... you know, we don't have gravitas enough to criticise the Beatles, but these are just our opinions on these songs, and I'm a Loser is not one that I'm going to come back to that many times, I don't think. Track number three, Babies in Black. As in, the baby is in black, not various babies dressed up in black. It's a Lennon and McCartney two-hander, quite short. I like this song, but was very... I think it's very reminiscent of Oh Dear, What Can the Matter Be? Because it begins with, oh dear, na, na. It sounds like it's going to become that song. Luckily, it doesn't. And the harmonies are really plaintive and save this song from becoming a bit silly.
Yeah, I think it's good to hear them experiment, but experiments don't always pay off. It comes across as too nursery rhymey, and it feels phony, and I think they're better than this. And that's how I feel about the song.
I feel, at least, though, the story is more interesting than usual. So in the past, they've had these songs that are much more to do with someone being in love with someone, and maybe someone's not in love with them back, but usually it's just happy, happy, lovey, lovey kind of stuff. But this is at least narratively interesting. So there is a dead man who is still holding the heart of the living lover that's been left behind. and therefore like the Macca and Lennon voices inhabiting that frustrated person saying, why can't you move on? Look, I'm alive. You know, I'm much better than that guy. He's in a box. You know, interesting idea for a song, but I don't think it lives up to that. In terms of recording stuff, there's some interesting details about how Harrison gets the swelling effect on his guitar. Apparently Lennon knelt on the... People enjoy this stuff. Lennon knelt on the studio floor and altered the volume control on his Gretsch as he played. So it's innovations like that...
Silly rock stars.
That make the Beatles the... Well, the insects that they are, you know.
Something to do between eating chicken nuggets. That's what it is.
Yeah. I don't know how many nuggets were being chomped at Abbey Road when this happened, but there we go. Track number four then, Tyler?
Rock and roll music.
This is a Chuck Berry, so I think we can tell, as per the original albums, the demand for material was so strong in those early albums that they had to do a lot of covers. And they were used to doing covers from all the Hamburg stuff, so that made a lot of sense. But it feels like such a regressive step that on the last album they had so many ideas. An overly long album, I would say, as well. I don't think they needed to make the album as many tracks as it was. They could have lost a couple and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
Maybe even held those over.
Stronger album if they had done that.
Yeah, yes. But it feels a regressive step for me that we're now more into that second album thing where we've got rock and roll covers. Now, that's one way of looking at it, quite negative. We can also say, well, they like rock and roll. They're paying tribute to these rock and roll artists and or R&B artists that they've been influenced by. So why not? I by this point, I was ready for a bit of rock and roll, to be honest. What are you laughing at?
Were you?
Well, yeah.
I just can't imagine you sat there going, oh, I'd love some rock and roll.
Murder a bit of rock and roll now. Well, after three relatively downbeat songs... And some of them I like No Reply quite a lot. The other two maybe not necessarily as successful, but I was ready to turn up the tempo a little bit, and I'm glad that throat shredding Lennon sound is back that we've not had for quite a while, or at least not in this form. I will say though, there's bits in this song where it's a bit weird the way it scans. So there's a bit where he says, "Gotta be rock roll music." It's like it's gotta be rock and roll music. You notice that as well.
Yeah.
Also, I must admit they have a rocking band. Okay, so we've established the word band is the end of that line. Man, they were blowing like a hurricane. Well, that doesn't rhyme. So,
doesn't need to rhyme.
The way it's set up, it does. It sticks out like a sore thumb, that.
I think when they do covers...
It's hurricane. That's not a word.
Look, I think when they do covers, they somehow end up revealing more about themselves. And in earlier albums, it's been that they can show how good they are with that song, that they're not quite capable of writing great songs yet, but they can play great songs and they can sound amazing. Yeah.
Whereas
this is awful. It's so bad. It's
that.
It's like they're trying to be the younger Beatles. It's like they're trying to be cookie cutter Beatles.
Mm.
And they're growing up and they're getting a bit older. And
this was like 2 years after they...
I know, but it still seems a bit phony.
They're still young men.
They don't need to still be doing it.
Reckon. No, it's good. It's fun. I'm defending this. It's got... Look, the cadence is... The scanning is off on a lot of it. The rhyme's off on some of it. It's not as authentic as it used to be, but I bloody like this.
It's not the kind of music I like, and I don't think this cover was worth recording. No, it's really rubbish.
Man, they were burning like a hurricane.
It's rubbish.
Well, I think this is a classic, and I think it's quite good. I'm up for this, and in an album that's quite miserable in a lot of places, I think you got to take your kicks where you can get them, and you know. It's got to be rock and roll music. That's what I always say. I always say it's got to be rock and roll music.
Rock and roll rock music, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, next track, I'll Follow the Sun. It was a reworking of an old song, McCartney recalled in 1988.
Mm. Despite that, and despite some people might be thinking that it's insubstantial, I don't think it is insubstantial. I just think it's short, which is not a problem. This is great. This song has really grown on me. This is one of the songs that it begins and you're thinking, okay, Mushy McCartney's back. But then when he...
Musher.
Musher, yeah. When
Andrew Lansbury, yay!
But you're just about to turn the, you know, the dial and say, right, let's get back to rock roll music. Let's have some fun.
Didn't he die this year?
Who?
Paul McCartney.
No. What are you talking about?
In 1964. Isn't that the rumour?
Oh, right. We're doing this stupid rumour.
Yeah.
I didn't know this would come up so early. I mean, it's a stupid rumour.
But just on the off chance that it's true.
There's no chance it's true.
We should cover it.
Fine. Okay, well, go on then.
Well, we might have got a replacement for Paul when he died.
Is that Ringo?
Sure. Yeah.
Was it the idea that he was like decapitated in a car crash or something like that? This is where the Nebby thing comes out and we don't know what we're on about. We don't have enough Beatles information.
I heard he was dropped into a pool of sharks.
I heard he was roller skating and fell onto a bush. A quite lethal bush. I mean, the thing is, the flimsiest discussions of these are like the fact that, you know, he stood the different direction on the back of one of the albums, I think, like Sgt. Pepper or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think...
I mean, it's obvious when you put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's fun to play it as a game, as in, what if that would have happened? Like, there's certain Sherlock Holmes fans who have this thing where they pretend that Sherlock Holmes actually really existed, and they try and find coincidences. So there's a bit in one of the Speckled Band stories where one of the characters says that her mother died in a railway accident, and someone looked up and realised there had been a railway accident that would have synced up perfectly. Now, that's fine to do if you're a massive nerd, and I count myself as a massive nerd, but to take
you're
it
very tall.
Yeah, that's well, yeah. So it's fun to do, but there's obviously nothing in this. It's a stupid thing.
It's vacuous. I hate it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That was the last track. We're on I'll Follow the Sun.
Yeah.
I like this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, a song that has invented 1,000 indie rock bands.
What, this song you mean?
Yeah. You can just hear how influential it is.
I could imagine Alex Turner sitting down with a guitar playing this, and because it's not one of the most obvious ones, I think you could play this. You could probably play this to a group of people who weren't that into music, and they wouldn't know it was a Beatles song, if you know what I mean. Like, because if you sit down and play Yesterday, then they'll obviously know it. But this one, you could do it and be like, yeah, it's just one of the songs I just came up with. And it has got that McCartney mushy quality. But as soon as we get to the lines, "For tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun." I mean, not the most complex and original metaphor, but so beautiful in terms of its melody. And McCartney said apparently that the song wouldn't have been considered good enough for their previous releases, but nevertheless, George Martin named it as one of his favourite songs. His favourite song on Beatles for Sale. I think it's great. I think this is a nice little gem that I will definitely come back to. That initially on the first few listens, I was like, yeah, it's just the same old Macca stuff, but it's lovely and short but not insubstantial.
We're starting to get those instances now of when we find songs that we didn't know about. Oh, this is what I wanted from this odyssey, this journey.
Yeah.
I wanted to find those bits of music that I love, but I've not heard yet.
And you can see these are specific stepping stones that will eventually lead to songs like Let It Be, Yesterday. Those kind of songs that are uniquely, like, that is a Paul McCartney song through and through.
When you hear them start to experiment, it's like, oh, this is what I've been listening for. This is what I've been waiting for. I wanted to see at what point they start to do that. Mm. But they are just building it up all the way through. They're always evolving.
Yeah, unless they're doing crap rock and roll covers. which, speaking of which...
What do you want about?
Well, we're going to go to track 6, Mr. Moonlight, originally by Roy Lee Johnson. Not someone I have ever heard before. And I actually don't think this is typical of the sorts of covers that they were doing in terms of rock and roll covers or R&B covers or whatever category this would be, because I think Lennon wanted, as far as I understand, Nevi, Lennon wanted to pay tribute to an artist that he really liked that maybe hadn't had enough time in the spotlight. I'd certainly not heard of Roy Lee Johnson before, although someone like Chuck Berry I'd obviously heard of. So interesting. This isn't really my jam, so to speak, but that opening call, you know, or that cry from Lennon where he's saying Mr. Moonlight, great vocals, really impressive. The recording is good. I like a lot of things about this song, but it's just not my kind of vibe. And I still think it's kind of a backward step for the Beatles to be running out of ideas, thinking, what can we stick together and stick on the album? Yeah, what do you think?
I've said a lot about covers, but I love this. I think it's done really, really well. I wish they'd done more stuff that sounded like this. I wish they'd been a little bit more inspired that way. It's just a nice place to be, this song. It's fun. I'm happy when it's on.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a happy song. It seems very broody. It's got. I like a lot of the production choices. Like, there's weird little organ sounds, and I think it's if we now start to think about the Beatles conceptually, their virtual studio. Early on, obviously, it would have just been skiffle, so very, very simple. But if you imagine it populated by drums, bass,
a few pots and pans, and maybe a brush.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Then the next incarnation, when they get into the studio for that first album, you've just got the, you know, mic stands, a couple of guitars, a ruddy bass, a bit of a drum kit. And then if you just imagine how every album, song by song, we're getting it populated by more, you know, a nylon guitar, strung guitar over here, a 12-string guitar over here, a clave or a set of claves, very nice, a timpani, which we'll hear later, all that other kind of stuff. It's just, you can see the virtual studio gradually being built up, a bit like the Sgt. Pepper's album cover, and it just creates like a really interesting sonic mosaic, if that's not too pretentious of a way of describing it, that it creeps up on you. We're so far away from the original Beatles, and it's
Beatles,
and it's a matter of a few years. It's so quick, the acceleration, but they're knackered here. You can tell they're knackered.
I just like it. They sound rejuvenated by it.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Well, to be fair, I mean, that opening call from Lennon, you can't say that's not full of energy, can you?
It's sometimes they do covers well, and I'm glad this one exists.
Seeing us out on side one, we've got Kansas City / Hey 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 Hey, originally by Jerry Lieber, Mike Stoller, Richard Pennington. Pennyman. This is a McCartney-led vocal. It's from 1952. It's a classic blues turnaround song. And this is... Have you watched the Get Back documentary?
Is that the new one?
It's the really long one that Peter Jackson did.
No, I haven't. Right. No.
I mean...
I've watched A Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, that's not a documentary.
I'm still in counselling.
You thought A Hard Day's Night was a documentary.
Motley, yeah.
Yeah. So, if I know a lot of people will have watched Get Back. I'm not even the biggest Beatles fan, but I watched it. I watched it all through its entirety, and it was a frustrating watch in a lot of ways because it is slow in places. Sorry, everyone who absolutely loves that, but you know it is slow in places. But the really frustrating thing I found about Get Back is they're meant to be writing an album. That's the whole conceit. They're trying to get new ideas together. And I'm sure there's a million reasons why people tell me I'm wrong here, but I found it so frustrating that they would basically not spend the time writing new songs. It would be clip after clip of them playing stuff like this, you know, from the past, just messing around with old cover versions. Now, fine, maybe they were getting the juices flowing, maybe they were trying to capture that old magic, but do the thing you're meant to be doing. Don't just keep going around playing the same old blues songs again and again and again. So I have little to say about this. I mean, I don't know much about Kansas City. I don't particularly care about Kansas City. I certainly don't like Hey, 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 like as a refrain. It does absolutely nothing for me, this.
Yeah, I'm getting whiplash with the way this album is making me feel. I hate it. I hate it. It's so... I'm sure musically someone would find this wonderful. I'm just not that person, and it bored me, and I may have skipped a little bit.
If you like blues and blues turnabouts,
I'm not a big fan of blues.
Well, nor am I really. I mean, I'm partial to a bit of Stevie Ray Vaughan every now and then. You know,
well, aren't we all? But,
well, yeah. it's
and maybe a bit of B.B. King, you know, just to take the edge off.
Well, I'll bring the edge on to play with him, but. Yeah, I don't think we've got much to say. And the last album that we reviewed, ended. I mean, maybe I'm overstressing this, but the last song on that side was Can't Buy Me Love. And this one is Kansas City, Hey, 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 or whatever. It's just... I can feel
it's like a backward step, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is a backward step. Yeah,
it's easy for you to say.
Yeah, I nearly said a banquet step, but it's not a feast of riches, it's a poverty of songs. So let's move on to side two then. Right, thank God we've got here. Bloody hell, I love this song.
Well, you can only partly thank God for this song.
Yeah, true, because he made the world in
seven days.
Yeah. See where you're going. But here, it's 8 days a week. This is such a good song. I know I'm not going to do this justice as well as we go into this song. It's night and day to the previous stuff. You've got a fade in, which is actually quite different for the time. So all those ding, 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 you know, all that stuff was relatively new. And you could tell the Beatles could have just started this with on Ooh, I Need Your Lovin'. That would have been the most Beatlesy way to start it. But they've taken the time to say, no, we're actually going to do something different here, something that's a bit more complex guitar-wise, and it's worth doing, and it creates a different vibe. And this might be my favourite Beatles song thus far in this Beatles journey. I just love it. It's got the cheeky... I don't know if this was a Ringoism. It sounds like a Ringoism, doesn't it? 8 days a week. A
bit. Hang on, let me check.
Oh, here we go.
8 days a week.
Oh, she's got me working 8 days a week.
8 days a week, yeah.
Not seven, as you think would be the normal amount, but eight. Ugh. Yeah, so...
I don't know where she thinks I'll get the time.
So, this also, I think, shows you how simple choices done well with the backing of an incredible song.
Well, this is the thing. I think there was a lot of instinct used in this song because it was partly written when they took it into the studio, and then they finished it while they recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of quick decisions being made, and they're not overthinking too many things.
Yeah, it's very vital.
There's an urgency that comes across, and I think because of that, it's got this rawness. It seems like a young man's song.
Yeah, definitely, when you've got the energy to work 8 days a week, definitely. I think that energy also comes across by... even just having that... Hold me, love me. It's so good and so infectious.
He just gave me clap.
That's the sort of thing that makes this fresh and vital and interesting. Whereas I think there's a bit of gloom hanging around this album. I did also look up the fact, I wanted to check, they all contributed hand claps to that. So that's not
thank
just...
you. I
know you were worried.
I was wondering.
You thought it was just Ringo's palms?
Sometimes it just sounded like three of them, and I was like, whose bloody hands are missing?
Yeah, is it, just listen hard. Is it Harrison's hands who are missing? No, it's all of them. All of them are right there. I also like the fact that you've got minor chords being used to support choruses. Yeah, I really like this song. I think also it's one of those songs that works so well stripped down as an acoustic song as well. It's obviously very poppy and straightforward on a first listen, but it's got the space that you could play it on an acoustic and finger pick it, slow it down a little bit in certain sections, and it would reveal itself in a really beautiful and different sort of way. So, yeah, it's just brilliant.
Yeah. World of Love. Thoughts?
World of Love.
Yep, that's what I've got.
Well, it's wrong. It's Words of Love.
Sure.
Use your eyes, for God's sake.
No, it does say world. I've just spelt it wrong.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I mean, I don't know if we're going to have a world of words to say about this one. It's a Buddy Holly song. It's Lennon and McCartney with Harrison singing too. So we've got a nice little three-part vocal here. It's very USA in its feel, which, I mean, duh, it's a Buddy Holly song. And it's nice, but we've gone from the Kansas City vibe to this... And then back to another cover. So there are nice things about it. You can tell they've gone for a particular texture, like the way they sing "Hold Me Close." They've mastered that Buddy Holly sweetness and closeness, like he's singing right in your ear to his sweetheart on a 50s dance night, you know, that kind of thing. But go on, what's up?
It's a new low. This song. it's so unnecessary. And
yeah, okay.
It's a bad place to be.
There's some nice guitar tones in it.
It's just... When are you ever going to listen to this song again?
Never.
Exactly.
The fifth of never.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit... They're worn out, and this is a big step down from the previous energy. I mean, if you build up the record... I think actually sequencing is awful on this album, like, thinking about it, just looking at it all.
Seems a bit haphazard, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And
it's like, what have we got left?
I don't know why you wouldn't begin with... Oh, I don't know. Like, I mean, I still feel every time in the past when we've done album reviews and we've questioned things, I feel sort of secure in the fact that I have an opinion, and I don't care if anyone agrees with that, but it's my opinion and there it is. But when you're saying, like, oh, the Beatles, not very good, the Beatles, it feels like you're criticising, you know, oh, not very good, Da Vinci.
Democracy itself.
Yeah, or like something really important, yeah. Or some other amazing artist, like, oh, Van Gogh, don't really like that one. That Sunflower, a bit passé. So I get that, but this is pretty bad. I don't think anyone's coming back to this unless you're a weird, like, Buddy Holly obsessive, but there we go.
Yeah, however, I feel like Words of Love actually takes you to a place that's necessary for maximum enjoyment of the next song, which is originally by Carl Perkins, mm-hmm. Honey Don't, and performed by Ringo.
Yeah, and I complained about a lack of star quality on the last album.
It gives some brevity to what was quite a negative emotion. I don't know how comedic his appearance is supposed to be, but
it
really works, and it really gives the album something different.
Yeah, I've written this is a laugh out loud song. When it came on, I just found it so funny. It feels like they just tried to they pushed Ringo into the booth and like, come on, you've not done one for a while. And it's like, oh, I guess I will then. And he did it. It's a long song as well. It's like it's nearly 3 minutes, which is long for the Beatles at this particular point in their career. I do like the nice clicky guitar tone. The dook 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 dook. That sounds pretty cool.
But I'm sick of the blues. At this point,
sick of the blues. That yeah, a good song, a very meta blues.
I'm sick of the blues. I'm
tired of the blues.
It's got me feeling ill.
Can you guess what my favourite parts in this song were?
I can't even stand still. Go.
Can you guess what my can you guess what my favourite parts in this song were?
When it ended?
No. It was when Ringo introduces some of the guitar solos.
Oh, doesn't he like talk to George?
Rock on, George, one more time for me. That's the first one.
Oh, no.
And then this one is, rock on, George, one more time for Ringo, or something similar like that. It's kind of...
Come on, George, one more time. One more time for Ringo, come on.
Don't put that guitar away. Yeah, I do like that. I think it's quite fun. But... this has no gravitas compared to some of the real high.
No, I think you need that. You need the breath of fresh air that Ringo provides here.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? Yeah. I mean, look, I'd rather have that than I mean, it is a cover, but another boring cover. So there we go.
Okay. So next song, Every Little Thing.
I think this really does prove my point here about. Well, it adds some weight to what I'm saying about the track listing. And if you just chopped off a few of these songs, and someone might say, well, duh, in the 60s, that wasn't the case. You had to have an album of this length or this many songs, or they're so short that you had to have 14, blah, 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 blah. But this is a great song. Why this is buried in the second half of the album, I don't really understand. It's a real highlight. And it's one of those songs when it probably the first couple of times you listen to it, and maybe this is just because I don't know the Beatles that well, you sort of think, yeah, it's quite nice. But when you get used to it, and then those, I think they're called parallel fifth harmonies come in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. On the Every Little Thing She Does, it's just great. And there's the timpanis come in, so that dum-dum gives a bit of gravity to what's gone on before.
It's a much more mature sound.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and again, juxtaposed against Ringo's song, it's a very mature sound.
Yeah, it's so sing-alongable. It's a good pop song. It is surprising that it's a hidden like album track or a deep cut, as some might say. But it's excellent, and songs like this, exactly what I was talking about earlier, it's a moment of like, I'm really, really glad I'm going through this. I'm really glad I'm putting myself through 12 albums of the Beatles.
Yeah.
The Beatles. But for reasons like this, for songs like this, it's so good, and I'm so sorry I didn't know it sooner.
And this is where... I completely agree with all that. I think this is where each member as well is adding something. It's not like, oh, this is a John song, this is a Paul song. So Harrison adding in the double tracked lead guitars to back up those vocals. He's not following the exact same melody, but he's adding so much to this. So, yeah, I'm just so happy that I've discovered this song, really. I will say that there is a version of this, apparently, that's by Yes, the prog rock band.
Oh, yeah.
That is everything I hate about prog rock music. So if you want to take your ears on a horrible journey, first listen to the nice Beatles version, and then listen to how Yes interpret it. And I know some people might like prog. I really don't like prog for those particular reasons. It's just overcomplicated, tedious nonsense played by very, very boring men. Have you heard it?
No.
I'll put it on for you later.
Look forward to it. I don't want to spoil the party.
Lennon with McCartney on this one. Interesting. I have definitely felt the feeling that is expressed in this song a lot.
It's very happy sad.
It is very happy sad, yeah. It's got a definite contradiction in it. Because very, very bright guitars at the start, and even the sort of shuffly rhythm is very bright as well. But that's contrasted with the fact that we've got someone who is in a social setting and is out of step. So formally, it works really well. We've got a brightness on the outside, but it's contradicted by the lyrics on the inside of the song. And like I said, I felt this a million times where I just feel out of step with a party or a vibe or a club and just thought, I just want to go, really. But you also feel guilty about going because you're going to ruin things. And I think this is an interesting one where we've got Lennon, again, exploring this idea of feeling a bit of a victim, feeling like the world is against him. And it's another one of those kind of breakup songs, you know, where it says, if she turns up while I'm gone, just let me know or something.
Very emotional man, wasn't he?
Yeah, it seems so. But to play devil's advocate, they know who they were writing for, and they know that they couldn't just pursue the, you know, love me do stuff. It's got to be a bit more complicated than please will you love me, to exploring these kind of feelings of betrayal, of sadness, of feeling socially awkward, that kind of thing. And that's a market that if you're singing to teenagers and you want them to buy your records, it's never going to dry up. You want them to be listening to these.
Teenagers like being sad.
A hot take from Tyler there.
Yeah.
Take that, teens.
But yeah, I thought this was such a hidden gem. It's got a more country and western feel to it. Thank God it wasn't blues again. It just adds a different colour to the palette. And it really grew on me over time. It's catchy, it's fun. And they didn't spoil my party.
Although I think if you put this on at a party, it ironically would spoil the party.
Wouldn't spoil my party.
Track 6 on side 2. What are you doing? McCartney taking the lead here for a cheeky 2:30 song. Now, apparently, an arrangement of this song proved quite difficult until the band redid the track on the final day of the sessions for this album. So we could say, and I'm hedging a lot of this from Wikipedia, by the way, we could say that the studio techniques used to achieve this complete recording, it could be considered that this, like I Feel Fine, is one of the first experimental Beatles tracks. Now, I don't personally think it matters when we officially say this was experimental. Obviously, they get very experimental by the time they stop touring because they're writing songs that are so complicated or sonically interesting that they can't replicate them or whatever. But interesting, what you're doing. It's got a real jangly happy quality from the riff that Harrison is doing. You know, very, very, very happy quality. But then there's a real darkness to what McCartney's singing here. And this feels like a much more mature Paul McCartney. It's not just if we had a song, for example, called What You Doing on one of the early Beatles songs, it'd be, girl, what you doing? Are you going to love me today? What you doing? Come out to play. All that kind of nonsense. Whereas this is, it's more like someone saying, why are you making these sorts of decisions? What are you getting out of this? Or reevaluate what's going on here. It's not just a simple song is what I'm saying. There's a nice contrast and there's a darkness to his tone all the way through it as well. So I don't know what you think about it, Tyler.
Yeah, the experimental... Lismness is creeping in, certainly.
Isn't
this? Yeah, just experimenting. Yeah,
yep, like the Beatles.
Experimentalizing with words. Yeah, the experiments are creeping in, foreshadowing where they're going to go, and that's an exciting bit because this is a point now for me where I wanted to get to. I wanted to get to hear the experiments, whether good or bad. Mm. And I'm now getting to the point where I'm really looking forward to it. It's pushing me on to the next album. I haven't loved this album as much as I've loved A Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get my powder non-dry and say this is the worst one so far.
Yeah, there's some nice highs on it, but there's a lot of lows.
Yeah, yeah, it's really up and down. If I were to rate each one individually, then, you know, on a graph, then it would be a very choppy graph, I would say.
Yeah,
we've got one more track to see.
We have, yeah. No, I do really like this song. And it, yeah, I'm looking forward to the next episode because of that. But the final track, Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby.
Yeah, weird one to end on, but quite cool in its own way. I am starting to have a soft spot for these Harrison songs just because they're a bit different. They're not silly like the Ringo ones.
Carl Perkins wrote it.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a Harrison-led song. Again, yeah, as you're saying, it's another cover, which is a bit...
Finishing on a cover seems weird.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I totally agree, but they finished side one with the cover. Maybe, I don't know, maybe sequencing of albums wasn't as big of a deal as it is. I mean, it's sort of thing that we talk about a lot, but I don't know. Maybe it's just not that big of a deal.
Well, my notes to this song are the journey in themselves. A needless song. Don't know why they've done it. Then it really made me dance.
Oh, interesting.
And I began to. I loved this song by the end. You know, YOLO.
One thing I was thinking with this song is you can understand the sentiment from Harrison and the rest of the band. Everyone's trying to be my baby. I mean, obviously there's that Austin Powers-esque jokiness of the Hard Day's Night stuff where they're being chased down the street, that kind of stuff. But that must have actually played on their conscience quite a lot. I mean, it's a joke and they put it on screen, but it must have been exhausting along with everything else. And having that level of attention, I can imagine, is a bit of a Midas touch thing. It's amazing for a short period, then you think, oh, I can't do anything now. And if you are trying to have a romantic relationship or various ones, it's still going to be really difficult and confusing if everyone is trying to be your baby. So I think there is genuine frustration coming out on this song with the life that the Beatles have in a short space of time cultivated for themselves, where they are so pursued in every ways. And I don't know how you're meant to react. I mean, you remember we were watching a couple of clips of them on the Ed Sullivan Show. The level of screaming.
Yeah.
It's not... It goes beyond, oh, wow, I must be cool. I must be accepted. Look at how many of these girls like me. I would just find that, like, are they going to actually kill me with desire?
One of the worst things about being in the Beatles was no one would let me pay for my sandwiches.
Right, okay, so you agree it was difficult to be in the Beatles then?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not finishing this song without talking about some STEED, which is an acronym, STEED, which stands
for... I've had one of them.
Which stands for... well, Jesus. Well, anyway, send, tape, echo, delay. So this technique was developed at Abbey Studios in the late 50s. involved delaying the recorded dry signal, sending it to the studio's echo chamber using a tape machine. The dry signal without delay was then also sent to the chamber via the tape machine's replay head. The resulting sound was picked up by two condenser microphones. These microphones then fed the wet signal back into the recording console. The amount of feedback could be controlled by allowing multiple delays to be sent to the reverb chamber, which could then lengthen the effect's decay time. Basically, there's a really interesting use of reverb and delay on this song.
And if that didn't make you sleep, nothing will.
Well, just listen to this song. It sounds different to every other song on the album.
It's lovely. In terms of the echo. It's great. Yeah.
I think that's quite a cool ending to a choppy album, I would say. I think choppy is probably the best, most diplomatic way to say that. My summation of this album, Beatles for Sale, is the strain of being in this band is obviously bad in some ways, in terms of the impact it's had on them, the covers that they're doing, the fact that there's a negativity creeping in that, I don't know, sometimes saps the life out of this, a bit of the energy. But I think there's also a lot of good stuff on here. So there are moments where the strain, even if it's just Lennon really going for it with his vocals on something like Mr. Moonlight, or the strain of having to bring back in a song you thought wasn't good enough, like I'll Follow the Sun, actually, that can create some real musical depth here. So I'm not keen on Beatles for Sale, I'll be honest, but some of the things that make this a not that great album make it a really good album in places. That's my overall summation.
Yeah, it's up and down, but its highs are pretty good. Some of my favourite stuff is on this album.
My favourite song so far is on the album, which is 8 Days a Week. So all my loving this week is going to 8 Days a Week, which only just narrowly. Because I don't want to like just be a hipster and say, oh no, it's this deep cut for no reason. If I genuinely like the single the most, you know, the big single, then I will do. So every little thing just narrowly missed out to my favourite song, which is 8 Days a Week.
Every little thing is my good one, which is that.
All my loving, we've done this.
All my loving, and
Go on, can you remember it? Your worstie for this week.
My worstie is definitely. What's that? Let's just double check.
Definitely. I just want to double check.
Words of Love.
It
was terrible. It's really bad.
Yeah, I mean,
it stunk.
Well, my Let It Be track, the one I've least enjoyed this week, I think was this month, was I Don't Want to Spoil the Party. It didn't gel with me very well. I mean, it's interesting.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, but we have different brains, so we've got different opinions on things. You said that like...
Well, I'm not sure about that, but there you go. Right, well, there's another month done. What are we in April now? Yeah.
Yeah, and we're ready for...
the next one.
Which is...
the next Beatles album.
Yeah, the one after this one.
Yeah, that one.
Help, we don't remember what it is. But we'll see you there next time. Goodbye.